Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I welcome you to an Empowerment Hour. We're going to share so much today. Yesterday, I gave you what the actual mainstream quality science showed would help with the Ebola virus. Now today, more, we have good information on how thyme provides antiviral protection against herpes and other viruses. I'm not talking about the Ebola, but a lot of people said, well, okay, Ebola's a virus. The Marburg's a virus. What about other viruses? What would help those as well? So we'll give you the scientific literature, good research, main peer-review research on how you can help yourself with herpes and other viruses. Then today, the protective role of vitamin D in neurodegenerative disease and tomato juice. It's just underappreciated. A powerhouse of liquid nutrition that prevents diseases, and I'm going to go through all the different diseases from heart disease and damage if you've been a smoker to your lungs, how it can repair that. So we're going to give you all that. And then we're going to talk about, does cancer grow more aggressively at night? Brand new research, and it shows it does. And I'm going to show you what you can do to help compensate and prevent that from manifesting in your body. And then, if time permits, a new study on apple peels. Once again, another great article from the Journal of Medical Food on 12 weeks of supplementing with apple skin and what it did. Then I'm going to do an in-depth analysis of just today, and I start reading early in the morning, the world literature on different issues. And behind so many issues is income inequality. I can take you into communities. I've been in the communities just recently. We spent an entire 12 hours walking down the streets of Camden, New Jersey, going up and speaking with gangs, going into the homes of people to see how they lived. And they don't have the money. They don't even have the resources for finding healthy foods, let alone being able to afford supplements. So behind so much of what we end up experiencing is income inequality. So I'm going to share what's in the news as of just today. It'll surprise you how much there is. But then I'm going to play some comments from some of the world's leading authorities on how we can correct this problem. I don't know how much time we'll have left after that, but if we do, then we will go into some additional areas that I have. Let's begin. First and foremost, we need to be understanding that food historically has been a medicine. Now, the oldest used medicine that doesn't go bad is honey, raw organic honey. And make sure that the honey is not coming out of a country that is processing it. They're really using no honey as such. They're using mainly sugars and boiling it down. You can pretty much tell because this tends to be very light and clear. The honeys you want are darker honeys. And the best honey of all, of course, is Manuka honey. But Tupelo honey is good and orange blossom honey is good. And the name of where the bees forage is how the honey is named. So if it's wildflower, that's because the honeybees are out into the big fields where they're just wildflowers. If it's jasmine honey, then it's the jasmine bushes. If it's the tupelo tree, then it's tupelo honey. Orange blossom, it's the orange tree. So that's how they get their names. You don't have to have a lot of honey, just a teaspoon. And you can put it into a cold tea or a warm tea, never a hot tea. Cold or warm are both fine. And then depending upon if you're using it just preventatively and because it's just a nice, healthy, immune-boosting beverage, that's fine. But if you want to protect yourself because you're going on an airplane or you're going to a concert, now, you don't know what viruses, bacteria are going to be airborne. Or, by the way, it's not always airborne. It's what's on surfaces. That's why whenever I go to a movie theater, and it's always very discreet, I take out a brown bag that I carry. I just put it down on the seat, and that way I'm not sitting on all the contaminants that are on that seat. You have no idea how gross seats are. In fact, recently when scientists took samples of nice movie seats, every single one had fecal contamination, every single one. You could have over 300 different types of bacteria on a single dollar bill, doorknobs, but then armrests. That's why there's just one of two rules. Either wear something long sleeve so your skin is in contact with that arm, or put down a paper towel. I do both. That way you don't have that problem. Now, people might think you're eccentric. So what? Or that you're extreme. Compared to what? Compared to getting sick? Same way, and you know, when I'm on a long flight, I'm wearing a mask on a plane. It's a simple mask. It fits over the nose, but I wear a special one that will keep all the major viruses out and bacteria. If it's a short flight, I don't. I'll just spray my nose, my mouth with colloidal silver, and I make sure I have every hour on a flight, I'll just take a little bit of Manuka honey and with 10 drops of wild oregano oil. That kills all bacteria and viruses that I might have been exposed to by being in what amounts to a flying petri dish. As a result, after over a million miles of flying, never once sick. All the people I counsel, I'm right in front of them, you know, a foot away, never been sick. And you wouldn't want to be in some of the places I've traveled or across sitting across some of the people who have really serious illnesses. But it's all about knowing how your body responds and keeping it healthy. So having nutrition that also provides antiviral and antibacterial property is just common sense. For example, Case Adams did some research on thyme. Now, it's a very mild herb, and of course, when you're looking at the Ebola virus, which people are now, and I absolutely believe that any person coming back from an area where the Ebola virus or the Warburg virus have been in a prevalence within a community, and if they've been in contact with that community, healthcare worker, aid worker, physician, nurse, all those people should be in quarantine in their homes for at least 21 days. That's just prudent and responsible. Now we have a physician that went bowling, was on subways. Here's what people have to understand. And also was working out. When you're working out, you're sweating. The virus sheds itself in your sweat. So let's just say that you sat down and you had your, as most people would, on armrest. Now that virus can live for hours on that armrest. Someone else comes along, sits down, and remember, the skin is a semi-permeable membrane. Anything that the body is allowed to expel, salts and toxins and water, which it does, it can also absorb in. And that's one of the ways people spread MRSA. That's one of the ways athletes spread MRSA, with open wounds or cuts or scratches. And we never used to have this. Now we do, mainly because of antibiotic resistance. The overuse of antibiotics actually created the super strains of bugs that are now killing people by the tens of thousands in the United States per year. So now this guy could have been spreading his Ebola virus all over the place because of that contact. Let's just say that, you know, he was rubbing his nose, which people do about 200 to 300 times a day, or touching his lips, which people do over 200 or 300 times a day, and then he ate in a restaurant. Well, you cannot kill any virus unless you go up to almost autoclave temperature. So what if that was a restaurant that did not sterilize the silverware, the glass he drank from? That means everyone else drinking from that glass or eating from that could be susceptible. Not that they would, but it's possible. In fact, we now know that herpes can easily be transferred from utensils and glasses. Because a lot of people I've counseled have had, I counseled some nuns who had herpes who had never had sex in their life. And they were confused. Well, you can get it through the vaccines, just like we got SV40 vaccine, the simian virus 40. And it was hidden for 30 years that it caused cancers. And when we found out, then a lot of people could understand why they had rare cancers. But you can pick up viruses very easy. That's why when I go into a restaurant, first thing I do, I put down a napkin on the chair. No one sees it. It's discreet. I put another one on the table because they don't sterilize the table. They come around with a dirty rag and wipe everything that was on there. And remember, people can sneeze and cough in normal conversation, just normal talking. As I'm talking right now, thousands upon thousands of small water particles are coming out of the mouth and projecting at this volume. I'm speaking quietly and softly, 10 feet, and they land on things. And then someone else comes in, and let's say you just have a little scratch on your arm, and you rest your arm there. You pull that into your body. Now, it depends upon your body's immune system and what the body's capable of doing. You can pick that up. So the rule should be this. Quarantine and then testing, even if you feel fine, because it could be latent. And then at least when you re-enter the population, especially in congested areas, you're not infecting anyone. It's just prudence. I think that should be mandatory. Now, here's the latest. Because remember, Ebola is only one of many viruses that have been found among animals and transmissible to humans. And Ebola is not, according to Case Adams in healingnaturally.com, the only outbreak. We've had a lot of outbreaks. And by the way, I believe that we should be paying a lot of attention to the cholera outbreak. Cholera is very easy to get when you're around other people who have it. And 10,000 people have actually died in Haiti. And over 500,000 have been infected in Haiti. And the UN was responsible for it and has done absolutely nothing to help the people. And yet billions of dollars were raised. None of that went to the Haitian people. It went to the corrupt, powerful in Haiti. It went to the bureaucrats in Haiti. And it went to the NGOs. And someday, some journalists will take the time to do an in-depth expose on the self-serving, corrupt nature of most of these non-governmental organizations, the NGOs. But be that as it may, what we have now is we have we have what is called thymus vulgaris. That's thyme, T-H-Y-M-E. And it can help against multiple viruses. And it has biochemicals in it known as thymol and camphor and boreal and carvacrol and terpenes and all of these different citral. These are all chemicals inside the oil structure of the herb that are very antiviral and have been used for antiviral protection. And now we know the mechanisms of this antiviral protection, and they're related to the same properties found among other studies. They interfere with the glycoprotein molecule lined envelope that surrounds many of the most virulent viruses. And there was research at Germany's University of Heidelberg found that thyme oil, along with several other essential plant oils, has significant antiviral potencies against the herpes simplex virus. That's herpes 2. The researchers found that thyme oil was effective in inactivating the virus significantly. They found the thyme oil was particularly antiviral immediately prior to the virus entry into the cell. It's also antiviral against herpes simplex 1. Now, a separate study done at the University of Heidelberg showed that there are several different types of viruses were inactivated, and it was reduced by more than 90% in a dose-dependent manner. That's the gold standard for determining whether a substance is treating an infection. And here's the conclusion of the study. Quote, Therefore, the extracts exert their antiviral effects on free herpes simplex virus and offer a chance to use them for topical therapeutic application against recurrent herpes infections. And then also there was an article, the antiviral for Newcastle virus infections. More recently, research at Iran's University of Fez found that extracts from the plant, the thymus, what is called the thymus vulgaris, or thyme, provides protection from the potential outbreak of the Newcastle virus. That's a very serious one. Keep in mind that the Newcastle virus was primarily propagated among birds around the world. The virus was first discovered in Java and Newcastle, United Kingdom, 1926-27. The virus can cause acute illness and frequent death among birds. It's also transmissible to humans. And the researchers tested it against the Newcastle virus and found it was extremely effective. Also, thymus was able to also block the attachment of the virus onto cell membranes and thus block the entry of the virus into the cell. And, quote, the mechanisms of action of these compounds is killing the virus and or interfering with viral replication. The most important glycoproteins in Newcastle virus are, and then it goes into the description of these fusion proteins, which are necessary for attachment and multiplication. Protease inhibition activation is observed in some substances of these plants. Thus, these compounds can interfere with the cleavage of these glycoproteins and inhibit virus attachment. It was also found to be effective against hepatitis. And keep in mind, the glycoprotein envelope that covers Newcastle is very similar to the glycoprotein that covers HIV, herpes, hepatitis, and Ebola viruses. And you go around the world, you'll find that thyme has been used for hundreds of years to treat colds, flu, headaches, fatigue, digestive problems, and so it's in the scientific literature. And on a regular basis, I'll be sharing with you other herbs or substances that can impact viral replication. You see, it's one thing to say that something is antiviral. Okay, what is the proof? Where are the studies? One of the things I really liked about several of the people I've worked with in the past, including Linus Pauling, was that Pauling would not make a statement that he could not first verify. So when he was showing how vitamin C impacted colds and cancer and the flu, he was able to produce good quality statistics to prove that. When Dr. Robert Cathcart, an outstanding physician who treated more people as a medical doctor with age-defining illnesses with pneumocystis successfully than all other doctors I know of, He had thousands and thousands of patients and the number one killer of age-defining illnesses was pneumocystis. He was using 50,000 milligrams a day with people, and he knocked it out. These people no longer had their pneumocystis, and he saved lives. In fact, he gave me a call once. Now, I knew him long before his work with AIDS. I knew him in the 1970s. And he said, I heard you're working with over 1,000 people with AIDS. And I said, that's correct. 1,200 people have AIDS-defining illnesses, and I'm working with them. And of those I'm working with, there is a small group who agreed to be in a protocol where we would be working with them 5 days a week. And he said, "And are you giving them 50,000 milligrams of vitamin C? I said, no. You know, they're on a protocol much higher. And so he flew into New York, and he sat with the individuals, and he looked at their records with their permission, of course, and he couldn't believe the success, not just with pneumocystis, but with everything, every age-defining illness. And that went on for years and years and years. And so he went back and upped his dosage. And then about 9 months later, I was in California, and I was at the Linus Pauling Institute, and Dr. Jarwala was showing me how quercetin, the nutrient I tell you all the time that you should be using, was able by itself to inactivate the HIV virus. And he was showing it in the lab, and Cathcart was there. And he said, then shouldn't we be using it? I said, of course you should be using it. So he broadened out his perspective. And then he presented papers based upon how many patients he saw, and he kept methodical records of their viral loads decreasing and their health and immune modulators increasing. That's the way it's done. And if you're treating people for conditions, you should be able to have records before your baseline beginning and then every 4 weeks thereafter. That's the only way to do it. To make claims you're helping someone, if you don't have those records, then you have no proof. Now, we're going to take a break. Oh, I do want to tell you, I mentioned that vitamin D is good for neurodegenerative diseases. And this comes from the National Center for Science and Research. And it shows that vitamin D is very, very good for virtually all neurodegenerative diseases. Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis. So that's good news. So I would say 3,000 units a day. And finally, tomato juice. Now, we know that it tastes good and it's used in a lot of dishes, but you got to understand it's just packed with nutrition. Vitamin A, K, B1, B3, B5, B6, the minerals, and then lots of good nutrients for the eyes. Harvard School of Public Health and Brigham and Women's Hospital Boston showed that when they used a study of 40,000 women from the ongoing Women's Health Study and followed them, in this case, 15 years, that there was a relationship between tomatoes, tomato products, and cancer. Big reduction. So here's what we know now from the scientific literature tomatoes can do. And of course, we're talking about organic tomatoes. Reduces heart disease. Tufts University and Boston University researchers quote, the highest average intakes of lycopene were linked to 30% reduction in the incidence of cardiovascular disease and coronary heart disease, respectively, published in the British Journal of Nutrition. The tomatoes can reduce damage by smoking, including secondhand smoke. And the reason why tomatoes contain what is called cumaric acid and chlorogenic acid. Now, these two acids protect your body from carcinogens that are produced from cigarette smoke. They enhance flavor when cooking, especially at low temperatures. They are dense in phytonutrients. They are one of the most they have more compounds like flavonones, flavanols, hydroxys, cinnamatic acids, carotenoids, glycosides, even fatty acid derivatives, all packed in there. They improve digestion. They prevent constipation. They reduce dangerous statin drugs. They prevent kidney and gallbladder stones. They give you healthier hair in texture because of vitamin K, healthier skin, and bone health. They strengthen the immune system. They reduce blood clots. They increase fat burning. They improve vision. That's because of the lutein, carotenine, and zeaxanthin, and prevent strokes by thinning the blood. They restore biochemical balance in diabetics. They reduce prostate cancer risk. Always take a jar of, or you know, whatever container you want of tomato juice when you go on an airplane. And drink it. It can help prevent strokes and clots. I'm going to save my rest of my discussion on, does cancer grow more aggressively at night? Yes, but what can we do about it? I'll give you that on the next program. We're going to take a break because I want to spend some time now on addressing income inequality. We will after this message. Please stay with us.
To a nation that's now moving into the greatest depression in worse shape than it's ever been before. we have a collapse around us, an economic collapse, a global economic collapse.
It's a class war of corporations to shift the burden onto people, and of the richest citizens to shift it onto everybody else.
We have undergone a coup d'etat in slow motion, and they've won, and we've lost. We live in a corporate state. There's no piece of legislation by either party that seeks to redress the injustices, the grievances, and the legitimate suffering of the American people.
The number of homeless in this country is growing exponentially. The number of unemployed is off the charts. And all the books are absolutely cooked in this country as to the number of unemployed, because they stop counting them after their benefits run out. They stop counting the underemployed and those who have given up.
The aggregate number of people working is not really as significant as wages. Wages themselves are declining, and that's why people are going further into debt. Wages are not in any way commensurate with a middle-class lifestyle. Wages are a disaster.
The United States government measures poverty in a very medieval way. They take the cost of a market basket of absolutely essential foods and multiply it by three, and that's what they call official poverty. Official poverty is 50 million. There is a measure called extreme poverty. Those families that are living below $10,000 a year, and there are 17 million people who are living in these dire straits.
There are structural reasons why the poor are poor. It's not because they're not right with Jesus. Everybody tells us that, you know, it's always mourning in America. Once we get through this recession, jobs are going to come back. And it's not true.
I feel so inadequate because I'm a late mother, and I try to work and get my home and do things in a proper order. And not be a stereotype. I worked all my life. I worked ever since I was 14. And right now with this recession, I'm not working now. And then my husband passed away. I became a widow. And all these things were totally unexpected. All these things, receiving all this money to help who? That's what I want to know. Who is it helping? Because I need help. I worked all my life. I've paid my taxes. I try to be a productive citizen. I just don't understand why we aren't getting help. I thought that this country is help for the people, and so many people. I'm not the only one that's. I mean, I've been a worker. I worked. I strived. I wanted. I was part of society, and losing my home, facing losing my home, has broken me down and totally has shattered my dreams and my hopes and. I just feel there's no mercy. What about the people and their families?
Does Congress, does the president, the head of our federal agencies who are elected or appointed to protect us, do they really care? Do they really give a damn? Well, let's take the issue of home foreclosures. This nation fell to its knees because the housing market collapsed in 2008. A guy named Barack Obama, running on hope and change, said, I'll give you hope. I'm going to change the way we do foreclosures in America. They're not going to take away your home. But what happened under Mr. Hope and Change and our Congress? There was no moratorium on foreclosures. Was there a bailout? Was there something for mortgage holders? Yeah, the banks holding the mortgages, the banks overcharging their customers. Basically, you had companies like the Countrywide unit of Bank of America running nothing but a predatory loan sharking operation.
We were in a go-go time. You know, the word reality was replaced with the word realty. And as a consequence, you know, people didn't probe into this too deeply. There were voices warning of this. There were concerned people on Wall Street who questioned all this, but they were pushed aside. In fact, there was a Federal Reserve governor who challenged Alan Greenspan and said, hey, Alan, we're creating a predatory lending problem in many poor communities. These people are being exploited. And he said, well, that's not that important because what we're seeing here is financial innovation. We're seeing, you know, whole new ways of financing things, and it's all positive because it's, you know, making the economy stronger.
So we now have a crisis of global proportions in which the failures, the debt, is literally unreckonable, and therefore you're just kind of putting money on the table and saying, well, the government will do so much with no idea whether it's really going to pay off that debt, whether it's going to allow the people who took on the debt to come up whole or not. The one thing you know is that the people at the bottom, not on Wall Street, but on Main Street, who were sold the mortgages they couldn't afford and lost the houses whose value went down and not up as they had been promised, they will not be made whole. And they are at the beginning of the food chain. They are at the bottom of the economy. They are the people who will not buy the cars, who will not go to the local stores and take advantage of the services. They are the ones who will begin this paralysis of the economy in which the hard economy, the real economy, follows the global fiscal economy into bankruptcy.
Those are just a few of the voices of reason giving you insights. More to come in a moment. This is just from today. This is from Jerry White. Rise in U.S. corporate profits fueled by fall in real wages. We heard Max Keiser discuss that. Quote, despite the slump in Europe and Latin America and relatively low growth in the United States and China, several U.S.-based multinational corporations are announcing better-than-expected profits for this quarter, particularly from their U.S. corporations and operations. While a portion of the earnings came from a modest uptick in sales, the profits were chiefly attributable to continued cost-cutting, falling real wages, and the ever-higher productivity being sweated out of workers. And so it looked at how the major corporations like General Motors and Caterpillar and General Electric exceeded Wall Street expectations because the workers no longer have an opportunity to have living wages. So they're squeezed, downsized. And now there's a whole new phenomena of bringing in highly qualified, well-educated, competent workers on visas, paying them one half or less without any of the other problems. No unionization, so there's no collective bargaining, and they don't have any of the holidays. You come in, you work, you get this low wage. And for people coming from economies that are already having trouble in India, South Korea, and China, it's an advantage. But that is a hidden phenomenon right now in the United States. So when companies are bragging about how much they're making, at what cost? This was interesting from the Max Planck Institute. Quote, 3 hours of life per euro. Quote, public spending appears to have contributed substantially to the fact that life expectancy in Eastern Germany has not only increased, but is now virtually equal with life expectancy in the West. And then it goes on to talk about how this happened, because we all remember how bad East Germany was before the fall of the Berlin Wall. They had very low life expectancy compared to West Germany. And they found it was that the Germans have put money into everyone's pocket by having a higher standard of living. With a higher standard of living, people can then have better selections. They have good health care, and they have better food. They do more exercising. They're living longer. So that's why it says 3 hours of life added on for each euro. So you increase the wages. Now, what would happen in the United States is you heard Professor Fox in one of the comments earlier, she was talking about that how dire poverty is. Well, there's now more than 7 million Americans living on less than $2 a day. Historically, that would have been considered the living standard of a poor person in Africa or Asia. Now it's in the United States. In fact, let me put it into perspective. If you took every single person who lives in Manhattan out of their apartments, townhouses, condominiums, and you put an American living on less than $2 a day, you still wouldn't have enough places for them to live in New York. That's how many poor people on $2 a day. Try living on $2 a day. And then she talked about 50 million Americans living in abject poverty. And then she talked about 17 million Americans living in dire poverty. Well, add on to that the figures I've come up with, and it shows that over 247 million Americans are living at the edge. That's three-quarters of the American population. Today, this is from Sarah Lazar from Common Dreams. Whistleblowers expose USAID's pervasive hidden failures. Quote, internal documents and whistleblowers reveal that the U.S. Office of the Inspector General, which is tasked with overseeing the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, billions in civilian foreign aid, is abrogating its watchdog duties by censoring audits, reports to hide findings that reflect negatively on the agency, according to an investigation published in today's Washington Post. Quote, eight current auditors and employees anonymously told the Post that information deemed unfavorable to USAID had been removed from audits from 2011-13. Quote, in some cases, the findings were put into confidential management letters and financial documents, which are sent to high-ranking USAID officials but are generally kept from the public. Okay, what does this mean? It means that the United States, when we have corruption, when we have something that would embarrass politicians or corporations or corporate leaders or the media, it's hidden. This is just one example of how pervasive, because the major agency tasked with uncovering corruption is now engaged in covering up corruption, U.S. Office of the Inspector General. This is another thing, and this directly impacts upon what we're talking about in who controls the world, who controls America. This is from Alternate, Martha Rosenberg. Articles entitled Popular Asthma Drugs Deadly Side Effects revealed once Merck stopped making money from it. Quote, Cody was never mentally ill nor had any ongoing problems, Kate Miller of Queensbury, New York says. I would not have given my son a drug that causes depression for a simple allergy. Who would? But my choice was taken away by a company that buried the risks. Cody Miller killed himself 17 days after beginning the prescription drug for asthma and allergy called Singulair. And he was a football player. And he began to take the drug. He experienced cramps in his legs. His second week was sweating profusely and couldn't calm down. He was agitated, anxious, having a hard time, and his eyes looked sleep-deprived. And then the last week, he killed himself. 9 million people, many under 16, used Singulair in less than 2 years, according to recent FDA data. Deaths were reported, linked to it. This is Merck's drug. They make $5 billion a year until its patent expired, and it was the world's, or the U.S. seventh best-selling drug. And then an FDA committee looked into it, and like Vioxx and Fosamax and Paxil and Ambien, now that the patent has run out, you start seeing all these dangers that were hidden by the company and covered up by the FDA. And that's what they're finding, and now they're finding out all these suicidal ideations. So no one knew that if you took the drug, you could end up with suicidal ideations. They hid it. And look at the number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys in America, suicide. So, once again, a major pharmaceutical company hides the truth about how dangerous a drug is, and people die. And the FDA always, in all cases, without exception, always initially sides with the company. And then we find out that the person who was overseeing this drug at the FDA had 20 conflicts of interest, was getting money from 20 different pharmaceutical companies. IRS whistleblowers, quote, from Truthout, Nafiz Ahmed, agency executives behind multi-billion dollar corporate tax giveaways. A veteran Internal Revenue Service attorney demands a congressional audit of the IRS to investigate the agency's alleged role in allowing U.S. corporations to illegally avoid paying billions of dollars in taxes, even as it cracks down on individuals and small businesses. A longtime veteran of the Internal Revenue Service, an attorney, has demanded a congressional audit because the IRS has been illegally gaming the system and helping corporations avoid billions. In a letter to the Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew, IRS Commissioner John Kosygin, and IRS Chief Counsel William Wilkins, Jane Kim, an attorney in the IRS Office of the Chief Counsel in New York, accused IRS executives, quote, of deliberately facilitating multi-billion-dollar tax giveaways, and the letter was just dated last week. Okay, what do we have? We have the IRS knowing and with malice aforethought allowing big corporations to avoid taxes where you and I, we don't get any break at all. And finally, from Richard Eskow of Alternet, facts about what's happening financially in this country. Here are seven ways Americans are being affected. Most people can't even get ahead financially. Quote, if the American dream means a reasonable rate of income growth for working people, most people can't expect to achieve it. All right, that's one. The stay-at-home parent is a thing of the past. There was a time when middle-class families could lead a comfortable lifestyle on one person's earnings. One parent could work while the other stayed home with the kids. Those days are gone. As Elizabeth Warren and co-author Amelia Warren documented in their 2003 book, The Two-Income Trap, the increasing number of two-earner families was matched by rising costs in a number of areas, such as education, home costs, and transportation. And these have been increasing and wages have been stagnating. Number three, the rich are more debt-free. Others have no choice but to live through debt. Number four, student debt is crushing a generation of non-wealthy Americans. Number five, vacations aren't for the likes of you anymore. And because people can't afford to take vacations. Number six, even health insurance, medical care is increasingly unaffordable for most people. And number seven, Americans can no longer look forward to a secure retirement. Those are just some of the things from just today. All right? And those are the ones I had time to read on the air. What all this means is that we're living in a time where our health, our environmental issues, the cast of our political system, the people who can be influenced by the money they received and what that does to the power they hold to vote in legislation or change existing legislation, has excluded what we as a public in common need. Honest persons who will make a better world for all of us without causing war and suffering on anyone else. And when you have an income inequality where people feel that all day they cannot focus on anything else because they don't know if they're going to have a place to live, food to eat, or just the basics, this shouldn't be happening at this point in our life. Now, I'm going to play another clip here, and I want to remind people that as a fundraiser for our sister station WBAI, I am holding the world premiere of my newest film, Poverty, Inc., which is the longest film I've ever done and the most complex and challenging film to tell the whole story of income inequality, greed, manipulation, gaming of the system at all levels. Who are these people? Who are the people behind the scenes? Why is this happening? This took years to produce. It's now done. And the premiere will be 35 showings beginning December 5th, running through December 11th. Five showings a day. I'll be at the evening showings for question and answers afterwards. And many of the people in the film will be at some of these showings. So these will be packed. So if you'd like to join me for the premiere of Poverty, Inc., my newest film, and unquestionably the most important film I've ever done. I've done a lot of films, including The War on Health, which has had over 100 million searches. And I have no idea how many views. I was told over 70 million views. This is the one that I think is going to be resonating with everyone. And yet it's still optimistic. The whole last section of the film is about positive solutions to stop this income inequality. Because you don't hear this talked about today. and certainly not broken down piece by piece. Join me. Call this number. Reserve your seat. It's by reservation only. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. It's only $30, and you're getting a $120 value. You're getting a $25 book. You're getting two copies of the film itself, plus the film itself, plus a Q&A after in the evening shows, and it's a fundraiser for WBAI. Call now, please, because this is something that you need to see. You will never see all these people from all these different parts of the world, and this film represents a worldwide view, not just American, and I'm sure it will be shown all over the world. 877-627-5065. Give a call now, and now we'll go back to one more segment.
Other rich democracies that have capitalist economies that are, as and in many cases, more integrated in the global economy than we are, yet have nothing that looks like the rates of poverty we see in the United States.
We have been rendered utterly impotent as citizens. We have no formal mechanisms by which to ameliorate the deprivation, the dislocation, the disenfranchisement that has been visited on working men and women in this country.
One of the things that employers did was they revived a kind of business that hadn't existed in the United States through the Second World War and the immediate following years. That business was the union-busting firm. It's the Pinkertons are the most famous of them. They had armies of goons and spies to break strikes and to spy on workers. That kind of union-busting company faded with the emergence of this brief, short-lived social compact between business and labor. But it reemerged in the 1970s. But now the union-busting companies didn't hire goons. What they hired were lawyers and public relations experts to scare workers.
America used to make steel. Then the steel industry started going down, and the steel companies were bankrupted. They were bought up by Wilbur Ross, several of them that went into bankruptcy. The workers' contracts, union contracts, were ripped up. Workers were told to take one-third of their union pay. Their pensions were loaded onto the U.S. government. We have something called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, so you and I as taxpayers took over the pension. What happened was that Wilbur then stuck all these steel companies together and sold them as a monopoly lump to the Mittal family of India. Wilbur, all he did was offload pensions, destroy union contracts, make no steel. He earned a $1 billion payday. What we ended up with was workers losing their money, losing their pensions, losing their security, and America got stuck with the bill.
The consequences throughout the country are devastating. The numbers of people foreclosed, one in four children needing food stamps to eat, and there's no hope in sight.
The big lie that was sold to the American people, and one sucker bought it after another. You can make it on your own. But they don't tell you the other part of it. The reason you go to Harvard, Princeton, and Yale is to be a member of the club. They're not doing it on their own. They're not making the hundreds of millions of dollars because they're such geniuses. It's an inside club with inside deals.
When you create an oligarchic state and you become tone deaf to the pain that is visited on masses of people who through no fault of their own, it's not their fault that the manufacturing jobs got up and left for Mexico and now are packing up and leaving for China. That is the responsibility of a state that betrayed its citizens.
After a while, the accumulation by the super rich, the accumulation of wealth becomes a pathology.
We have allowed a billionaire class to emerge.
It's a really grotesque situation where you've got a fraction of 1%. It's not the top 1%. People should stop saying that. The top 1% is 3 million people. This is more like about 50, 60,000 people.
When I was in the Chicago Boys workshop, And we'd have to change locations to avoid protesters each week. You know, we'd have some hidden place where we'd all get together. And all these guys wearing, like, white turtleneck sweaters with dark sunglasses. They really looked like dictators in training, as they were. To give you an idea of how these people think, we would discuss, it wasn't theoretic stuff. We would discuss things like how to eliminate overtime for midnight shifts in Brazil's factories. The way you do it is you kill their union leaders. You arrest them and you break their knuckles. And if they don't go along with your plan, you disappear them. This is brutal stuff. This is economics at gunpoint. And I saw it there, and these people thought nothing of it. You know, to them it was just kind of shock therapy.
And after a while, the accumulation...
You will hear some terrible stories, and you'll hear the confessions of a man who said that he was sent in to bribe, and if the bribing didn't work, a president of a nation to turn over their natural resources and to get rid of their unions, then he would be killed. No. You have to appreciate that business as usual has been sanitized by the media that is a part of the problem. More on this on an upcoming program. I'm going to open up the phones now for TalkBack, your opportunity to call in and share your points of view on the issues of the day, including the inequality that we face. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our number. Just a couple quick program announcements. Tomorrow at 3 p.m., I'll be doing not a lecture. Rather, it is a workshop to bring people together who believe that solar storms are serious and believe that rather than trying to do something on their own, they would like to network with other people so that they can have one person or a group working together. And I'll be showing the ways that you can work together. You'll have a chance to meet other people to work together because... Are solar storms coming? Yes, they are. We had one just this week. The one we had just this week, which you'll see the photograph on it, it is 9 times the size of our entire planet. That's how big the plasma burst from the sun was. 9 times the size of the entire planet. Had we been in the cycle and got hit with it, there'd be no electricity on the planet Earth. So it's just time before we get hit. And it's increasing in its probability. It's a free public service, not a lecture, but rather networking on and my giving you suggestions on best places to go, how to get there. So if it does happen, when it happens, you'll be able to survive. We're also going to be, I'm going to be opening up an interview for personal assistant and also looking to have someone who will be running the Progressive Documentary Film Festival that we're going to be launching and is in the process of being launched for next year. You'll call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. I see the phones are just now starting to light up, and we'll go to as many as we can. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You know, you have a lot of members of your audience who not only listen to WBAI, but they also listen to PRN, depending on their situation during the day. And I'm getting a lot of emails, and people are asking questions like this. How would you help WBAI if they would accept your advice to turn the station around and to bring back its audience?
All right, let me make it generic, because we have a lot of non-commercial radio stations listening right now. So it's not just for BAI, it's for everyone. First and foremost, you have priorities. You have bills you have to pay. You have rent, transmitter bills. You have salaries, taxes, utilities, pension funds. All of those are important, but none of those are as important as the audience. So you must include the audience in all of your priorities. My suggestion would be this, and it would be really simple, and that is, let's say that a book cost $100. All right, that would be an average for many of the books offered on non-commercial television and PBS stations, NPR stations. The moment that that money is brought in and takes, let's say, 24 to 48 hours to process, that the amount of the actual cost of the premium, which is generally at, let's say $10, that would go into a premium account. That premium account would only be dealt with to pay premiums. So then immediately, let's say the publisher or whoever was producing the book would get their $10, and then that person would be responsible for pick, pack, and shipping. Now, this is the big, big issue. A, it takes forever to get money for a premium to the people who are producing the premium. And that's the problem. The audience may not know this, but the vast majority of time spent is for the station that doesn't have enough money to get the money over. And frequently, they won't have enough money in one drive because they paid the other bills. They made all the other bills first. And then they'll say, well, the audience is okay. We'll pay for the premium in the next drive. But that's a long time. Sometimes that's 3 months, 6 months, or not at all. And we've had thousands upon thousands of not at all. People have paid for the premiums, not received them, or got them late. What happens is each time you do that, you reduce the people who are going to support the station. And then if the premium is finally paid for, how long does it take sitting in an office to get out to the people? It should be almost immediate. So my suggestion is this. This is the positive way that you deal with this. First, you have the money for the premium go directly to the person producing the premium. Secondly, you have that person then pick, pack, and ship the same day the premium. If you do this, within 48 hours, the person is paid for a premium, and it's been processed. Another 24 hours, the premium is being shipped. Within a week, a person's received their premiums. That regains your audience and the trust that you care about them and are honoring them. B, you stay out of FTC violation. Remember, it is a federal law. You cannot not ship a premium within 30 days. If you do so, then you could run into a $14,000 fine and you could lose your license. People have to understand there are consequences. So all stations, PBS, NPR, or Pacific, or any other non-commercial, make your audience first. Put them up there, all right? No reason not to do it that way. And then, secondly, get programming that involves today's interest. We are frequently programming based upon someone's interest in the 1970s or 80s. And it's important that we understand that today is what counts. You need people to talk about what's important in people's lives today. What do people want today? They want to be empowered. They want empowerment with positive information. They want resources. They want to know what they can do for themselves, their community, and their own ideologies. We need more younger voices. We need vital voices. We need vitalism in all media. Fox lost 22% of its entire audience in the last 12 months, and yet it's number one. MSNBC lost a whole lot. CNN lost. These are dying industries. The land-based radio network is gone. It's over. People are not listening to land-based stations, except very old people or people who are not connected to technology. But that's a minimal amount of the audience. The people most likely to support what you're doing are younger people who are vitalist and want to do something that improves the world they live in. So you've got to have them, their voices, their producers, and methods of getting to them. We have more people listening right now over cell phones and other portable vehicles than listen to over 99.9% of the people listen to me, download the show, or listen in other means, or even by telephone. So get current with where people are at. We have too many people thinking as if this is 1976. It isn't. Do something other than angry radio. We've had enough angry radio. Nobody wants to wake up in the morning and hear someone screaming at them for 2 hours or being dumb for 2 hours. Have positive, affirming platforms that embrace constructive dialogue. That's what we need across the board, all over, in every city, in every network. And I believe that if you don't do that, you'll end up having attrition and you'll end up destroying yourself. Just look at the numbers for PRN. Look at how many people we have. Utrice Lead has 500,000 downloads. That's more than she ever had on BAI in 22 years. That's the internet. That's the future. Hope that answers your question.
Sure does. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more in our next program. Joining me in studio, Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. You look so familiar. How are you today?
Doing great. And people coming to your lecture tomorrow?
I hope so. I hope to meet a whole bunch of really good people tomorrow.
And that's at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
83rd and Broadway. And we want people to call, make a reservation at 646-926-5422. You leave the next day.
Yes, I do.
And we'll miss you.
Oh.
And all the people who were inspired by... Utrece has been spending her days networking, and one of the things that she is working on now, and I'm very excited by it, is that in the past couple of years, we have lost all of the African-American stations in New York City.
Yes.
And she has reached out and is networking with the finest voices from those stations and bringing them over to PRN.
Yes, I hope so.
And to have a whole chorus of voices speaking to the needs of the community, people of color, in ways that are constructive, progressive, spiritual, and healing.
Yes,
that's the whole purpose. That's what we're about. So I'm looking forward to that, and I know...
I'm glad, Gary, and I'm so happy about how supportive you have been of this idea and receptive to it. And, of course, that is consistent with your history. So in that spirit, I've been cheerfully taking on this assignment. And we hope that soon that we would have at PRN.fm just something for everybody, truly a progressive approach to broadcasting.
Two things that we really need. We need a phenomenal gospel program.
Oh, we have that.
I love gospel. That's
I know,
my favorite music.
I heard you.
See, what I play on the air is not what I play upstairs.
No, what you play upstairs.
Yeah. And because I love how it just vibrates. You feel good.
Yeah.
You feel empowered. And also Caribbean.
Yep.
We have so many people listening from the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And I believe that they need a program that deals with the issues in all the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
in a constructive way with solutions. I appeared on a fellow show who has a very popular show in the Caribbean, and it was the most unusual experience of my life, because the standards by which I would expect a program to be, it just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, someone asks you a question and walks out of the room. And I want to hear people. There are a whole lot of good professionals who could do a program that nailed the issues.
Absolutely.
For all the Caribbean. When most people think of issues in the Caribbean, they think of Haiti. No, you've got a whole lot more than Haiti. So anyhow, we're looking forward to all these shows coming
on
board.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gary, for your support, really, and your enthusiastic receptivity to it. That's a great, great feeling. And it just confirms I'm in the right place.